Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 170 for October 26th, 2008. Coming up in a few minutes.
Everybody knows each other. Everybody gets on very, very well with each other. We'll exchange information, you know, we'll chat. You're trying this, you're okay, we're trying that. There's not many other industries you can say that about.
That's John McDonald, the distillery manager at Balblair. It's one of this year's most honored distilleries, and there's a new version of Balblair coming out this week. More on that in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. If you're a fan of the Laphroaig 15 and 30-year-old malts, you may want to start stocking up. I caught up with distillery manager John Campbell Friday night in Philadelphia and got an update on plans to harmonize the entire Laphroaig range worldwide.
Beginning of the year, the 25-year-old cast strength version will be coming to the US, and that's to replace the 30-year-old, so that's something that's new. The next thing that will be new will be a 10-year-old cast strength, and we're just going to, it's going to be the strength that it is, so it is what it is, and we'll probably be doing two batches a year of 10-year-old cast strength.
Now, you've had the 10-year-old cast strength out for a while, right?
Yeah, we're just, it's always been, it's 55.7 just now, but we're going to just let it kind of go where it is, what it is, kind of thing, so that we're not, there's not too much production issues in the background, really. But it'll be just different strength every batch.
Now, tell me more about this 25 replacing the 30.
Yeah, well, it's a mixture of some sherry casks and some bourbon barrels. We're just fusing them together, and we launched it in the UK last year, and it was kind of a bit mild, so we're just putting it out as cask strength second time round.
What else is going on?
15-year-old that a lot of people in the US will know about is changing next year. Probably next April, May, we'll be bottling it. It's changing. It's going to be an 18-year-old now. So shifting, and that's just the way the stock's working out, the reason why we're changing it, because it's basically as 18-year-old.
Is that a worldwide move?
Yeah, that's a worldwide move as well, yeah. What'll happen next year is, and I know a lot of the US consumers have been in different brands of Laphroaig or different packages, the whole world will be synergized next year.
So what will the worldwide range look like this time next year?
This time next year we'll have the 10-year-old, like the 10 is the 10 is the 10. We'll have quarter cask, we will have an 18-year-old, and we'll have a 10-year-old cask strength but coming out in batches, and the 25-year-old.
On another note, one of Laphroaig's biggest fans is stepping down. Beam Global Spirits and Wine CEO Tom Flacco announced his resignation on Friday, just as parent company Fortune Brands announced third-quarter earnings. The Beam unit was Fortune's most profitable division, and Tom gets a lot of the credit for that. Just last month, he was inducted into the Bourbon Hall of Fame, and as he told us last year in episode 111, has his own cask of Laphroaig aging at the distillery. More new whiskeys to talk about this week. Diageo is releasing 7 new selections in the classic malts range for the U.S. this fall, including an 18-year-old Oban that will be available only at the distillery and in the U.S. There's also a new distiller's edition from Oban, and on that front, if you're planning to attend Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest in New York on November 11th, I just got word that Oban distillery manager Kenny Gray will be on hand that night. There are also new distiller's editions from Lagavulin and Talisker, along with a 30-year-old Talisker, a 25-year-old Brora, and a 29-year-old Port Ellen. I'll have more details on these malts in an upcoming episode. Glengoyne has 3 new limited edition releases. The 11, 16, and 19-year-old malts are all single cask releases. They're being released as part of the distillery's 175th anniversary celebrations. On the bourbon front, Woodford Reserve is getting ready to release the latest edition in its Master's Collection series of limited edition bourbons. Master distiller Chris Morris is going back in time this year with a sweet mash bourbon. Now, you're probably familiar with sour mash bourbons, where a small part of fermented mash is held back from each batch and added into the next batch to help the fermentation process. The sweet mash is an older style of distilling that skips that step. I'll have more on this with Chris in an upcoming episode. Back in August, Auchentoshan distillery manager Ian McCallum gave us a preview of his soon-to-be-relaunched malts. Now the entire range is out, complete with redesigned packaging, and I had the chance to discuss it with Morrison Beaumont's Jamie McKenzie.
We really looked at the packaging as it stood today, and after talking with consumers and talking with single malt whiskey enthusiasts and talking with premium spirit drinkers, we identified the fact that it was actually quite a complex looking pack, and we wanted to really just, if anything else, simplify it, you know, give it a strong shelf presence, because we don't have pots and pots of money, unfortunately, at Auchentoshan. So with Auchentoshan, what we wanted to do was make it, you know, very simple, and you'll see on the label we've clarified single malt scotch, triple distilled, and you know, we're trying to now that it's been relaunched, get the whiskey into people's hands, over their throats, let them taste exactly what a triple distilled single malt whiskey is all about, you know.
And this was sort of designed also to make it more attractive to women as well, right?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say... I wouldn't say that specifically, but, you know, what is interesting with Auchentoshan is that it is such a smooth and accessible and refined single malt whiskey that, in fact, it does happen to appeal almost by default to people who aren't necessarily, you know, single malt whiskey aficionados. It also appeals to people who do have, you know, who do have a great palate for single malt whiskey, and they appreciate the fact that Auchentoshan is very, very smooth. But we find that Auchentoshan is very popular with people who are maybe discovering single malt whiskey for the first time.
And
that includes obviously ladies as well.
Now, let's run through the entire range, because you also relaunched with a couple of new versions as well, right?
That's absolutely right, yes. Well, let's start off with Auchentoshan Classic. It's a young, single malt Auchentoshan. It's 100% matured and first fill bourbon casks.
And it replaces the Select in the lineup.
It replaces Select in the lineup, yes. So it's fresh, it's vibrant, it's young, but it's very smooth, obviously, the triple distilled. Lovely notes of vanillin coming through, so it's got a very, very approachable style. It's a very elegant single malt, yeah. We then move on to 12 years old, which will be the next expression in the range. They'll be retailing for approximately $45. The classic is going to be $29.99. The 12 years replaces the 10-year-old. Now, the 10-year-old was beautiful, grassy, lowland style, very floral, if you like. But the 12 years just brings a little added complexity to the mix. It's even, if I would dare to say it, it's a little bit nutty in style. So it's just a cracking dram.
And then you go up to the new 18.
Well, in between the 12 and the 18, we have Auchentoshan Three Woods, which I'm sure many of Auchentoshan fans will be, one dram that a lot of people hold very close to their heart, the Three Woods. It's a cracker. You tried it yourself not that long
Absolutely.
Ago.
Absolutely.
And so we've kept the Three Woods. It remains, and that's obviously our single malt Auchentoshan that's matured in three different types of casks. First of all, the bourbon cask for 10 years, the Oloroso cask for a year and a half, and approximately, you know, this all depends on the course of maturation, but Pedro Jimenez for maybe up to 6 months. So the three casks, so the Auchentoshan Three Wood remains. We have a new expression in between Auchentoshan Three Wood and Auchentoshan 21-year-old that is Auchentoshan 18 years old. And that really is a sensational Auchentoshan. It's been released for the first time. It won double gold at the San Francisco Spirits Competition this year. And it's really a very complex Auchentoshan now, you know, and a very elegant style with a sensational finish. And, of course, we finish off the range, the cherry on top of the cake, the Auchentoshan 21.
Which needs no introduction because it's been around for a long time.
That's correct, yeah. No, absolutely right. Yeah. Considered by many to be the quintessential lowland single malt whiskey.
There's also another new Auchentoshan being released exclusively this coming week. The 1965 is a 42-year-old malt that will be available only at the World Duty Free outlets in London's Heathrow, Gatwick, and Stansted airports, along with Edinburgh and Glasgow. 132 bottles will be available for a whopping £2,000 each. This time last year, we heard from Barry Bernstein and Barry Stein at Toronto's Premium Bottlers about their Whiskey Works kit. It came with a bottle of young whiskey and a 1 liter New American White Oak cask, and was designed to give you a chance to experiment with aging whiskey and looking at the influence wood can have on a whiskey. Now the guys have come out with a new version. Whiskey Works Solo leaves out the bottle of whiskey, and that has some advantages. First off, it means they can now ship the cask-only kit anywhere instead of just within Canada. And second, it means you can play with any whiskey of your choice and even try a wine finish if you want. Just put a bottle of wine in first to season the cask. There's a link for more details at the Whiskey Cast website. Canadian Club is looking for a few good mustaches for a very good cause in November. Let's call that Movember. It's actually a month-long fundraising event for the Prostate Cancer Foundation. Canadian Club's Brian Stockard explains.
The Movember Foundation was founded in Australia, and this is its second year here in the United States. And the basis of this charity is to raise awareness for prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is the number one form of non-skin cancer in men, and one in six men will be afflicted with this sometime in their lifetime. So once we knew a little bit more about Movember and what they were trying to accomplish, we felt like it would be a great partnership for us to get on board and drive awareness and help them raise a bunch of money for this great cause.
And how do the mustaches figure into it?
That's the great part. In Australia, the slang for mustache is Mo, M-O, and they felt like it would be a great concept to start growing mustaches for a month-long period, pretty similar to how you could get pledges for someone to do a walkathon. In this case, you get pledges to grow a mustache. So you get other people signed up, and they pledge you whatever amount they feel like donating. And then beginning on November 1st, you start growing your mustache. And then at the end of the month, you can go ahead and shave it off or keep it if you like it. So it's just a cool way to do something a little bit different. And when your friends and family start to see you growing a mustache, they'll start to ask questions. And at that point, you can talk about Movember and what you're doing.
And hopefully they decide to jump in on this themselves and support your effort.
Absolutely.
And you've got a bunch of people within the Canadian Club family doing this, right?
Absolutely. We had a kickoff party in our corporate headquarters last night. Had about 200 employees that attended. We're hoping for a couple more, 100 throughout the organization in total. And, we're hoping that everyone can get together and donate. We have a couple of great ways to help grow this participation for our Beam Global employees. We're offering a trip as a prize, and for all those non-Beam Global employees, such as yourself and anyone else that would like to join, if you raise $100 or more, you get a ticket to a gala event, and there's six gala events across the country, and if you go onto the Movember.com website, you can check out where the nearest gala event would be for yourself to attend. So there's a nice award there for you, a reward there for you to get online and be a part of this program.
Now, the reason Brian kept using the word you is because I'm joining the Movember campaign, and I want you to take part, too. If you visit the Whiskey Cast website, there are links where you can sign up to join the campaign and raise money for the Prostate Cancer Foundation, or donate with a credit card or PayPal. I know times are tight. The global financial crisis has everyone nervous about money these days. But if you can spare even $5 or $10... it'll go to an important cause. Thank you for your support. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. Milroy's of Soho in London will hold a master class with Richard Patterson of White & Mackay on November 3rd. The Brandy Library in New York City will hold a spirit school on bourbon and other American whiskeys on the 4th. Whiskey Live Cape Town is the 5th through the 7th, followed by the Johannesburg edition November 12th through the 14th. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's U.S. chapter will hold its next single malt extravaganza on Thursday night in Fort Lauderdale and again on November 7th in Seattle. The Oslo Whiskey Festival is November 7th and 8th in Norway. Whiskey Fair Essen is the 8th and 9th in Essen, Germany, along with the Spirits in the Sky Festival in Leuven, Belgium. The Hopscotch Festival in Vancouver runs November 10th through the 15th. Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest New York is the 11th. The Philadelphia Whiskey Festival is the 12th. And the Pittsburgh Whiskey Festival is the 14th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
Inverhouse's Bal Blair Distillery has been getting a lot of attention this year. Whiskey Magazine named Inverhouse Distiller of the Year in its annual Icons of Whiskey Awards, largely for the work it did in relaunching the entire Bal Blair range. In August, whiskey lovers who attended the Royal Mile Whiskey's Whiskey Fringe Festival in Edinburgh gave the Bal Blair 1989 the People's Choice Award for Best Whiskey that weekend. Distillery manager John McDonald has been key to Bal Blair's success, and I had the chance to sit down with him for a few minutes last month in Paris.
I joined Bal Blair August 2006, and I came at a very exciting time, relaunching Bal Blair, reinvestigating the whiskey. Before it was really a standard 10 years old, 16 years old, so we really looked at it again. We wanted to deliver to the consumer absolute creme de la creme Bal Blair, you know, top quality. So one of the first jobs I was tasked with was to investigate the stock in the warehouses and, you know, try and identify what was the best of the best. And just to show the extremes that we went to, we earmarked 1,062 casks. And between myself and Stuart Harvey, the master blender for Inverhouse, we took that down to 81 casks only for the three vintages. 30 for the 97, 36 for the 89, and 15 for the 79, which sold out in 5 months. Hence, we had to deliver another vintage, which was in 1975, which was something different again. There's a second fill sherry cask, only six casks. We chose for this 3,000 bottles. So, I mean, that's the level that we're going to.
The one thing that impressed me the most was at Whiskey Fringe in Edinburgh when the 89 was selected the People's Choice Award.
That's right.
And that's the one Bal Blair I have on my shelf, and I'm proud to have it. And that's a cracker of a whiskey.
It is, yeah. We were obviously delighted for the 89 to be voted, you know, best of the fringe, especially in your home country. You know, very pleased to have that. I think the 89 is a tremendous example of Bal Blair. Second fill bourbon cask. I think it's a great after dinner whiskey. You know, very satisfying, long finish, quite creamy, toffees, vanillas, lemons. Very satisfying.
What went into the decision to go with the vintages instead of going with year expressions?
It was something different. I mean, Bal Blair was always recognised by people, certainly at my level in the industry, sort of mid-management, you know, production. Everybody knew it was, like, very high-quality whiskey. And, you know, why wasn't this pushed before? But Inverhouse had taken a decision to really establish Pulteney before, you know, we went to Bal Blair. Because we wanted to really aim it as a prestige premium malt, you know, that's the reason we went vintage, so we could deliver best of the best to the consumer.
Where do you go from here? You've just released the 75 now. What comes next?
I'm not really sure I can tell you that at the moment, but you won't be disappointed. We're already investigating future vintages. Next month there'll be a single cask edition Bal Blair 1965. She's 43 years old, single cask, 355 bottles from a sherry butt. It's very, very different again. Still very much a Bal Blair, but very different.
What makes the Bal Blair spirit unique?
I think there's a lot of factors there. Certainly, the workers at a distillery, I'm very proud to have them on board. You know, these guys have been there a long time, dedicated, proud of what they do, and very interested in what they do as well.
How did you get your start in the business?
I started in the business in 1989. I actually worked for Glenmorangie for 17 years, and I started as a warehouse man. I came out of college a bit disenchanted with college life, and I knew the manager at Glenmorangie, Ian McGregor, who's sadly no longer with us. I knew him before. I heard there was a job going, and I knocked on his door at his house. He took me in and we sat down. Of course, a bottle of whiskey came out, and I think it was the shortest interview in distilling history. He asked me one question. That was, would you like water in that? And I said yes, and I started on Monday.
Did whiskey run in your family before, or were you the first one in your family?
No, my brother Kenneth is a stillman at Glenmorangie, and he's now been there 30 years.
What's the most enjoyable part about working in the whiskey business?
It's a unique industry, I feel. Certainly at production level, everybody knows each other. Everybody gets on very, very well with each other. We'll exchange information, you know, we'll chat. You're trying this, you're okay, we're trying that. There's not many other industries you can say that about. You know, we'll share information, share secrets.
What secrets can you share with the public about what life is like inside the distillery?
You'd have to go to the distillery to actually experience it. You'll get an idea from, you know, websites and books. I think you have to visit a distillery, you know, to really experience it in the flesh.
Yeah. Paint that picture for me. What's it like in the typical day at the distillery?
For me, there's not really a typical day at a distillery. There's always something different going on. You really have to keep your eye on the ball, whether it be milling, mashing, stilling, maturation, all of these things. You really have to keep your eye on the ball.
One of the things that I have heard from a number of collectors, including some folks this weekend, is that the character of whiskies has changed over the last 20 years or so, as computers have taken over at distilleries, as production methods have changed, and the spirit we're getting now is not as good as it was produced back when you and I were kids and our fathers were producing the spirits in the 70s and the 60s and before that, because the technology wasn't the same back then and humans were doing all the work. What's your answer to that?
For me personally, I can only speak for Bal Blair. We're still a very traditional, hands-on distillery. You know, we have some machinery, you know, to help the process, but it's the people at Bal Blair that are actually making the decision, you know, temperature of mash, cut off of the stills. You know, we don't have any laptops at Bal Blair. You know, we're very much people-orientated. So to say that the whiskey was different years ago, I would dispute that. I would, for Bal Blair.
When you go back and nose the casks, can you sense a difference?
Every cask can be an individual, I think. Every cask will be, you know, one will be different from the other. Maybe slightly different, but there will be differences there. And that's what makes the job of, you know, myself and certainly Stuart, the master blender, you know, it's such an interesting job.
I have to ask, what's the oldest cask you've got back there?
I don't think I'm at liberty to tell you that, Mark.
Is it older than you are?
Well, the 1965 comes out next month, and that's older than me. Not by much, but it's older than me.
As John hinted, the 1965 Bal Blair is now being released. Only 350 bottles are available. It's been bottled at a cask strength 52.3% ABV and will sell for £1,250 a bottle. For more details, there's a link to the Bal Blair website at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links to support the Movember campaign to fight prostate cancer, the calendar of events, my whiskey ratings, the WhiskeyCast store, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.